Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's President Kenyatta is mentioned in the Pandora Papers.
We have seen the highest price of fuel in this country. People are not affording basic things. And then you sit down and go through the Pandora Papers expose, and you realize that the same people who are stealing from us cannot even trust their own systems.
Today is World Teachers Day, and we'll have a report about Kenyan teachers. Malawi's opposition DPP accuses the Anti-Corruption Bureau of persecuting former President Mutharika. Nigeria's resident doctors will end their strike tomorrow, Wednesday. And Liberia's former defense minister urges the courts and elections commission to listen to the voices of the people.
It is my hope that the voice of 20,000 people who voted have been into office in Lofokane will be heard. And I think it's important that although the position of the senator is a political position, decision to affect the rights of citizens should not be politicized.
And a Facebook group hopes to turn the tide on Burkina Faso's image problems. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is among world leaders named in leaked documents dubbed the Pandora Papers as hiding secret family wealth overseas. The papers, compiled by scores of investigative journalists, show the Kenyattas hid tens of millions of dollars in offshore and shell companies, even as he urged officials to declare their own wealth. The revelation of hidden assets, while not necessarily illegal, has called into question the sincerity of the Kenyan president's calls for transparency in the fight against corruption. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Kenyatta family was one of the hundreds of companies and families around the world reported to be holding large sums of wealth outside their home country. According to the report from the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the ICIJ, President Uhuru Kenyatta and his family have accumulated more than $30 million in wealth, including a property in London. The president and six members of his family were linked to at least a dozen offshore companies. The law in Kenya prohibits any public state officer from holding or running a bank account outside the jurisdiction of Kenya without the blessings of the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Agency. Constitutional lawyer Bob Mukangi says it will be difficult to know whether the Kenyattas have declared their wealth since such information is not shared with the public.
The Public Officers Ethics Act, which demands that public officers, state officers, declare their wealth, not only elected officers, but also appointed officers, that they must declare their wealth. And this is done annually or at election time and must be updated. The only challenge with this provision is that the wealth declaration is not made public. So, yes, the different personalities, gaining entry to appointive or elective office in Kenya do make the declarations, but it is difficult to track and trace.
The ICIJ uncovered 11.9 million files from companies that created offshore accounts. It is said wealthy corporations, business people and politicians like to use Panamanian foundations to hide money because they don't have to reveal their identities to the government there. According to the International Monetary Fund, tax havens such as this cost governments between $400 and $800 billion every year in lost tax revenue from companies and individuals. The loss of the revenue makes it harder for government to provide citizens with basic services like running water, electricity, health and education. Wanjeri Nderu is a social justice activist based in Nairobi. She has planned dozens of protests in Kenya about the misuse of public funds. She said the citizens are experiencing economic hardship due to such vices.
We as Kenyans are being overtaxed already because of the kind of theft we are experiencing. We are finding that the president and his cronies have sat down and come up with measures to even tax us further. We have seen the highest price of fuel in this country is what we have right now. People are not affording basic things. And then you sit down and go through the Pandora Papers expose and you realize that the same people who are stealing from us cannot even trust their own systems with the loot.
According to a Kenyan newspaper report Monday, Kenyatta said the Pandora Papers will lift the veil of secrecy for those who cannot explain their wealth. He said he will respond fully to the report when he returns from Ethiopia, where he's attending Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's inauguration. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Kenyan teachers face challenges as the world marks International Day for Teachers today, Tuesday, according to the Kenya National Union of Teachers. Due to technology challenges, most teachers in Kenya were forced to redo the lessons that they had already taught their students through online learning because many students could not access classes remotely. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, has called for more investment in teachers so that African children can access quality education.
World Teachers' Day is celebrated across the globe on October 5th of every year, and according to the report by the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, for Africa to reach educational goals by 2030, sub-Saharan Africa will need to recruit at least 15 million teachers. Teachers play an important role in building up society, and Kenyan teachers have shared their experiences, struggles, and efforts in their field of expertise. Tekla Jerubet Mayo is a pre-primary school teacher at Moi Educational Center, Nairobi. She shares her experience in teaching, especially during the pandemic.
So it affected us so much, so we had to repeat everything as teachers, and it has affected the whole thing up to this year right now. And right now we are rushing. The timeline is very short, and the workload that to be covered is a lot. We are no longer doing things the way we used to do.
The teachers have kept the classes going, conducted exams when schools reopened, and most of all, helped their students to cope with the pressure of new normal during the pandemic. And Teacher Tekla has a message to aspiring teachers.
Teaching is not just papers, it is a calling. You need to have passion with it. So that is it. I feel so satisfied. I'm happy with my profession. In fact, that profession makes me to be so happy. Sometimes when I have stress, I feel so relieved when I just mingle with those young ones, I forget everything.
Another teacher, Jasper Undimu, teaching high school in Nairobi, condemns the government for teachers' poor working conditions. Despite teaching being his passion and with teachers in Kenya poorly remunerated, Mr. Undimu discourages aspiring teachers.
Teaching here in the Republic of Kenya is losing value because teachers are being demeaned by the government. The teachers are being harassed through different policies that are being initiated by the Teacher Service Commission, which is the employer of teachers.
As Kenya continues to execute the new curriculum in schools, teachers are frustrated while the government has ordered them to go back to school and retrain at their expense for the new curriculum. Bungoma East Kenya National Union of Teachers Executive Secretary Agri Namisi said that the government has failed teachers.
Teachers are complaining about what is called CBC. Mm-hmm. CBC is a new curriculum, and they are saying that they were ill-prepared. The government has not taken time to train the human resource. And once now, the teachers have been forced to start now doing what you call capacity building, but at the expense of a teacher. The government failed in getting the concerns of the teachers.
Mr. Namisi blames the current regime for mistreating teachers.
We expect to have a president who is friendly to the labor movement. The president appears to be very, very hostile to the labor movement.
Together with this year's theme being teachers at the heart of education recovery, the world appreciates teachers' determination and diligent efforts, especially in the crucial stages of the COVID-19 pandemic. And today we say, Happy Teachers' Day. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jumbo in Milwaukee, USA.
In Malawi, the Democratic Progressive Party of former President Arthur Peter Mutharika is accusing the country's Anti-Corruption Bureau of persecuting the former president. The commission is investigating the former president for alleged abuse of his taxpayer identification number by two of his close aides while he was president. Chief of Staff Peter Mukito and security aide Norman Chisale allegedly imported millions of kwacha worth of cement using Mr. Mutharika's taxpayer identification number. President Lazarus Chakwera's government has vowed that the law will apply to every Malawian, regardless of their status. Shadrach Namalomba, publicity secretary of the Democratic Progressive Party of Malawi, says the Anti-Corruption Bureau is abusing its authority.
What is happening is that, as you know, the Democratic Progressive Party is a party that does not condone corruption, because we know that corruption is our number one enemy. To that extent, therefore, we support the work of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, to the extent, therefore, that they must be objective. But what we have noted with regard to the case of importation of cement, which they say concerns the former president, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, is far from being objective. He is a victim where business people allegedly abused his TPI number, taxpayer identification number, to import cement, and they did not pay duty. Now, to the surprise of the Democratic Progressive Party, the ACB went ahead to freeze the bank accounts of Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, and yet they did not freeze the bank accounts of the businessmen. That, to us, is the double standards, that the ACB is not being objective. Of late, what we are now gathering is that the ACB would want now to do search of the properties that the former president has. Now, we are saying, first of all, give us the charge. What case do you have against him? We are going to cooperate.
Are you saying that the former president Mutharika's taxpayer's identification number was used by some business people? How did it end up there?
We do not know, and that's what the president said. He issued a statement that he doesn't know how people could get his taxpayer identification number. It is a number that is within the Malawi Revenue Authority. And in any case, the question should be to MRA, how did you allow the business people to use the taxpayer identification number of the president? By the way, let me add that under the taxation laws, the president has got privileges. He can import items duty-free. And the problem that we have in this country is that we have no limit to the amount of goods that a sitting president can import. To the extent, therefore, business people, conniving with the Malawi Revenue Authority employees, they now misuse that privilege by importing goods that do not have the blessing of the president. And this is the case.
So you say that the Anti-Corruption Bureau is persecuting the former president, but the Anti-Corruption Bureau is saying it is following the mandate of President Chakwera, and that is that the laws of Malawi will apply to everyone, irrespective of their status.
We also share the same view, that the rule of law must take precedence over anything else. And that's what we are advising ACB, that they must not act above the law. In this country, no institution, whether the presidency or the Anti-Corruption Bureau, is above the rule of law. No one is above the constitution. Even the former president is not above the constitution. So everyone else must act according to that constitution. Now, when we see ACB having double standards, should we not speak out? And this is what checks and balances are all about.
Mr. Namalomba, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Shadrach Namalomba is the publicity secretary of the opposition Democratic Progressive Party of Malawi. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, October 5th. In Nigeria, the National Association of Resident Doctors, the NARD, says its members will resume work beginning tomorrow, Wednesday. This after the doctors' group suspended its two-month strike action. Some Nigerians say the decision is a welcome relief, especially as the country battles the global coronavirus pandemic. The doctors say the decision to suspend the strike comes after the government's recent encouraging stance during negotiations. Dr. Darius Godia Ishaya is the president of the National Association of Resident Doctors.
We realize that there's a change in the positions, and the government was willing to return back to negotiating table with us and to continue engagement. And we saw some commitment that the government exhibited after our discussion to start or recommence payment of the medical residency training fund to some of our members which have received. So I haven't seen those goodwill that the government was extending to the new executive. We decided that we call for an emergency National Executive Council meeting, and which we did, and the National Emergency Council meeting look at the recent posture of the government councils that on compassionate ground to the masses of the country who have not benefited from our services for the past 2 months. We decided that we suspended the strike for 6 months to monitor development from the government side. If they continue with the implementation as they have started, then we'll continue with our work.
The decision to embark on strike came under a lot of criticism, especially at the time of this global coronavirus pandemic. Some even accuse your members of being insensitive. For now, what is the step forward?
Well, you know, as I said earlier, we didn't wake up one day and just decided that we were embarking on strike. The decision was taken after several ultimatums and several engagements with the government. And also, if you may recall, in February, we went on strike and signed a memorandum of action with the federal government. But they reneged on that memorandum of action. So I can say that even though I am not into blame game, but the decision, or rather the prolongation of this strike, is not entirely the fault of ours or our members.
How much time, or what is the period or time frame do you anticipate the government to resolve the concerns for which you embarked on this strike?
Well, we don't expect that it will be done in a day, but we will continue to monitor the body language and the progress in the implementation of those issues that made us to go on strike. And if we see a good commitment and the willingness of the government to implement those positions, we meet in 6 weeks and take appropriate decision as to the way forward.
Dr. Dare Godia Ishaya is president of the National Association of Resident Doctors of Nigeria. You are speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. In Liberia, the former defense minister during former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's administration is urging the country's courts and the National Elections Commission to listen to the voices of the people of Lofa County and declare his victory as senator of that county. This comes as the local front page African newspaper, citing unnamed sources, reported Monday that the Elections Commission is on the verge of declaring the Lofa County senatorial seat vacant. The paper reports that some Lofa citizens are threatening to secede if Samukai is not seated. Samukai received the most votes during the December 2020 special senatorial election, but the Liberian government filed a petition against certifying his election because he had been found guilty of misusing the pension funds of the armed forces of Liberia. Samukai says former President Johnson Sirleaf approved of how and why the money was spent. Samukai says he does not support the idea of Lofa County seceding, but he hopes that the courts and the Elections Commission will listen to the pleas of the people of Lofa County.
I have confidence in the credibility of the Front Page Africa, but unfortunately, the source of that information is either ill-informed or is trying to preempt something to see the reaction of the citizens of Lofa County. In the first place, the Constitution is very clear as to the declaration of vacancy, who has the authority to do so. It's not the Election Commission. That authority comes from the Senate and is provided for in the Liberian Constitution. But in the event of death or incapacitation or otherwise, those are almost the exact words, it will leave the Senate to have that authority to make a determination, and it will then notify the Election Commission. So the Election Commission on its own has no legal authority to make a declaration of a position in any county, unless otherwise determined by the Senate.
So, Mr. Samuka, it's been months since you were declared winner. What do you make of the decisions from the court virtually denying you taking your seat?
Well, I want to make it very clear that I respect the authority of the highest court in the land, but I disagree with their opinion. Luckily, it is stated the opinion of the court, so that's the opinion. That's how they present it based upon the information. I think the facts, one day when the research is done, it's going to be very clear what those facts are. And I intend to talk about those facts when the case is finally brought to book. It is my hope that the voice of 20,000 people who voted me into office, that the voice of the majority of the people who voted for me in Lofa County will be heard, And I think it's important that although the position of the senator is a political position, decision to affect the rights of citizens should not be politicized to the detriment of all of our interests. I think it's very important that fairness takes place. It's very important that we find a resolution to the matter. And it's very important that we take into consideration the feelings, views, and aspirations of an aggrieved people. In this case, the aggrieved people of Lufa County.
The whole issue stemmed from allegations which the court has found you guilty of misusing the pension funds of the military. Did you refund the money or where are we?
Well, in the first place, the money was not stolen. The money was used on the AFL based upon instruction of Her Excellency, Madam President, with the clear intention of using the budgetary means to have it replaced because of the exigency the government was facing and the exigency of the situation. For example, Sergeant Tata was wounded in Mali and brought back to Liberia. His situation was deteriorating. He has paralyzed from his waist downward. There's no money in the budget, absolutely whatsoever, to cater to any person of the AFL in such matter. It was clearly determined that he needed to lay. And we recommended, and the president approved, we have the approval, to allow us to use those funds, and the funds will be replaced. At the end of her term, she had an excellent discussion, and it was agreed. And in fact, this government now, the president today, took leadership and made payments. But people think otherwise, mainly from the era of the Ministry of Justice. That is where the whole issue came about, and so that's where they took us to court. But there was not a single evidence, absolutely whatsoever, now or anywhere, in the deposition, in the presentation, the entire case, that any money was stolen, that any money was used for my personal benefit. How did that form part of the judgment? That's African politics.
You mentioned how the people should listen to the voices of the people of Lofa. What do you make of this report coming out of there also, that the people of Lofa feel marginalized to the point that they are considering secession or declaring Lofa a sovereign state?
No. I think those reports may reflect just anger statement an individual may have made. That is not the aspiration of the people of Lofa County. Lofa County is an integral part of Liberia. There is no way I can support that. There's no way the citizens of Lofa County have such an intention. However, the citizens of Lofa have the right to express their frustration. They have the right to express their eagerness for their senator to be seated. They have the right to express their view that the person whom they have elected is not sitting, and they are demanding that the person sit. That is what the citizens of Lofa are talking about. That is what the people of Lofa are desiring.
Former Defense Minister Brownie Samukai, thank you so much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Really appreciate the opportunity.
Brownie Samukai is the former defense minister under former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. You are speaking with us from the United States. Burkina Faso has been making headlines for an Islamist insurgency that has created one of the world's fastest growing humanitarian crises. But one man is showcasing what the country has to offer beyond conflict with a group he created called Burkina Faso is Chic. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
Since conflict began 6 years ago, tourists in Burkina Faso have become a rare sight. The US State Department advises against all travel to the country due to the risk of terrorism, kidnapping and crime. Ben Nombre, a local web developer, is doing what he can to turn the tide on the country's image and showcase the good the country has to offer.
Burkina Faso est chic, c'est une idée qui est venue.
Burkina Faso est chic was an idea he came up with in 2019, says Nombre. When he started to notice a number of terrorist attacks, he saw that Burkina Faso's image was being tarnished. He points out that for a long time, Burkina Faso was a country where there were a lot of tourists coming in, before many of them were lost in recent years. Burkina Faso est Chic's Facebook page has attracted almost 24,000 followers. It posts regularly, highlighting a range of topics, from lively night spots to nature and wildlife. But one local business that had catered to tourists wishing to ride horses is struggling, says the owner, Siaka Gananu. Gananu says it's been affected a lot since 2016. It's like you see. At one time, in such moments, here it was full of people. But since the terrorism, it's affected a lot. The government says that as international tourist numbers have dropped, they're looking at aiding businesses in the tourism industry. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
And that's it for this Tuesday, October 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.